Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 11th of Kislev. We're going to talk about Rav Moshe Feinstein's thoughts on firing a teacher who was deemed incompetent. This is from Shut Igrot Moshe, from the response of Igrot Moshe, Choshed Bishpat section, the third chelek, third group of Chuvot, the published on Choshed Mishpat, response number 26, Chaf Vav, and it's from the 11th of Kislev, Tav Shin Yud Bet of 1951. I'm not sure that it's true, but I think it's true that his background, that the careers and the life paths of educators are often very difficult. And I think it might be true that Rav Moshe Feinstein had a great deal of empathy for those who take on this important role in the Jewish community and therefore tried to find ways to help them out, even when they might be somewhat at fault. I think it's a tshuva that I find difficult for a couple of reasons that we'll see as we go on, but I think it is worth our while to understand it and to learn it. So he's written to by the head of the Beis Din in Newark, New Jersey. There was a certain yeshiva. They don't name the names. Everything's, you know, hidden, but there's a teacher who's been there for 9 years, and there's a new principal, the principal claims that this teacher is incompetent. And the reason he's incompetent is because classroom management. He can't keep the kids quiet. And even though it's true that he explains things clearly, he can convey ideas in a way that the kids could learn from him if they were to pay attention to him, it doesn't really work out because they don't pay attention other than the first 2 months of the year. The first 2 months of the year, they're still a little bit afraid of him. They still have, you know, the manners that have been instilled in them from their parents are still somewhat in effect. So therefore, for the first 2 months, they get something. But after that, it goes bad, and therefore, they want to get rid of him. And to support his claim, he brought proof from other administrators there that this was always true of this teacher. This teacher had always had this problem. They were always trying to find ways to work on this problem. The principal who had been the rabbi who had been principal beforehand for 6 years. So I think this principal has had it now for 3 years. The principal who had been principal before him for the first 6 years of this man's employment agreed with this evaluation, and he gave testimony that what happened was, if you really, really strongly supported this teacher, then it worked out. But it needed a lot of support. So they don't clarify what, but it would be something like the principal would have to walk in all the time to quiet the kids down, to threaten them, to instill discipline. That the principal had to really be an active force in there. And also, in the middle of the school year, he would switch the guys' classes, meaning if they have him for 6 months, let's say, or 4 months, depending on, you know, school year, 5 months, whatever it is, the first 2 months, the kids are still sort of afraid of him. After 2 months, discipline breaks down, principal supports him, works what he can do, and then a couple of months later, switches his class so that it's a new class, and you get the 2 months again. That was part of what the principal had done in the first 6 years of the man's employment, try to help him out. This new principal says he doesn't like that idea because he thinks switching teachers in the middle of the year isn't good for the students. He also says that he, as principal, doesn't have the time to be helping him out in this way. But the teacher, I think, claims that this new principal has been there for 3 years with him and it's worked out okay. And he points out that they've also raised his salary over the course of his time teaching, even at times when there wasn't across-the-board raise. Meaning an across-the-board raise doesn't say anything about a teacher. But if he gets a raise when there's not an across-the-board raise, it seems to suggest that he's doing his job okay. And that, and he also says that people have tested these students, his students, and some of them have turned out to know the stuff pretty well. So that's the story brought before Moshe Feinstein. The school wants to get rid of him. The new principal wants to get rid of him. And you have all these questions. So the questions are things like, is he good or is he not good? And what evidence you have on either side? We have the evidence of the principal beforehand who said he needed a lot of support. You had to switch the kids. The new principal says switching classes isn't good for the kids. He doesn't have time to give the support. You have the evidence of maybe he got raises when he shouldn't have. Not when he shouldn't have, but when it wasn't absolutely necessary, which would imply that they like him and that he's doing his job well. And you have some people who tested some of the students who had worked out well. So these, I think, are very complicated questions. Rav Moshe Feinstein is not going to bring up everything that I would have imagined bringing up about these things. So, for example, one of the things that is sort of implicit in Rav Moshe's discussion that we might want to think about now is, when you have a difficult situation, how do you handle it along the way if you're trying to to be a nice guy about it. Meaning, if the former principal and the current principal are trying not to be terrible people, they might give a man a raise even when it's not across the board because he's not making a lot of money. Teachers certainly weren't making a lot of money back then. So they try to be nice to the guy. And they might try to support him. And let's suppose 10% of the kids will listen to him even if the rest of the class is running around and doing whatever they want. So that will show for those 10% he works out to be a perfectly fine teacher or rebbe. How do we evaluate all that in terms of saying whether or not he's a competent teacher or not? So Rav Moshe won't quite get into these things, but I think that these are important questions that underlie this whole thing. So the first question that Rav Moshe Feinstein takes up, though, is what's the implicit agreement upon hiring a teacher? Is the agreement upon hiring a teacher that he can expect to keep the job forever unless something goes wrong? Or is it a contract for, you know, 2 years or 3 years, and that's really all that's expected? Meaning, even if legally you sign a contract for 2 years, would that mean that the implication is at the end of the 2 years, the whole new discussion about whether to keep him? Or is it hiring at will, and the teacher can be let go at will at any point of time? So that's a question that Rav Moshe Feinstein raises in terms of what the agreement is here. So he says, you might think that there's a debate between the Rashba and the Rosh in halachic terms about a different situation. Let's say somebody agrees to support somebody else, to give them food. So the Rashba in Gittin thinks that it's a machloket in the Gemara, but he thinks that the Rava certainly thinks that it's an open-ended agreement. It goes on forever unless something changes. And even according to Rav Ashi, who says it's not true, the Rashba had suggested that when it comes to monetary things, even Rav Ashi might agree. And the Rashba actually has a tshuva as well, as a responsive as well, that's cited in the Beis Yosef on Eben Ezer, where he also assumes that agreements are generally made, these kinds of agreements are made forever, or, I mean, open-ended, such that they don't end until something happens to come end them. The Rosh, however, also cited in that Beis Yosef, and it's two opinions. The Rama quotes both opinions about this issue. The Rosh says he thinks that it doesn't go on forever, that it's assumed to be a limited kind of a hiring. And then, so the Rav Moshe Feinstein says, when it comes to a melamed, to a teacher, we could imagine that you'd say that the agreement is for this school year, and then evaluate it year to year. But Rav Moshe Feinstein says, Lania Dati, none of this is actually relevant. That's in a different situation. Michael Lazun is a person agrees to do something actively and proactively. And maybe you could say he's not committing himself to actively do that other than for a certain limited period of time. But if I hire somebody for a job, so I'm not newly obligating myself, meaning in the case of feeding somebody else, it wasn't somebody the person was required to feed. So therefore you say, if I'm taking on a new and unnecessary requirement for myself, obligation for myself, that'll be for a limited period of time, you kind of imagine. But if I'm hiring somebody for a need that I have a need for teachers, I have a need to educate the students because I'm running a school institution. So there, when you're hiring a laborer for a job that exists, Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks that everybody would agree that it's l'chol ha'eit, it would be as long as there is the job around, as long as unless the person says something, makes an explicit condition, says something about it, the general assumption is that it's forever. Now that itself, I want to pause to say, it makes sense in a lot of ways, and I don't want to question it in those terms, but it also carries with it certain problems. Not our topic here, but there's other things that come with the assumption that teachers are of the right to keep their job unless something goes wrong. So for example, in another context, there's an idea of Chodesh Lashana. There's an automatic pension sort of that if somebody gets fired, if a school or another institution lets it go, a rabbi or a teacher, they have to pay them as a severance package a month's salary for every year that they've been there. So that means then if you keep a teacher for 10 years and then something goes wrong and you really need to get rid of this teacher for whatever reason, it is true, for example, the teachers burn out. It is true the teachers lose their interest in teaching and they can have been good for a while and now they're really not good. Or the school, the student body can change. There's all sorts of things that can change. It means then, Chodesh Hashanah would then mean you have to give this guy, if he's been there 12 years, a full year's salary just to get rid of him. I think it's a problematic situation, and it's based a lot of it on this idea of Rav Moshe Feinstein's, I think, that the assumption is that it's an open-ended commitment, and that the commitment is forever unless something goes wrong. In the 1950s, that may or may not have been true. Rav Moshe Feinstein later in this tshuva says he spoke to principals and they all agreed that yes, the assumption is that you're going to keep somebody. I think that becomes a complicated question of how you do it. And it sort of, it's especially true because I'm not sure that principals running schools, even if they're rabbanim themselves, understand the halachic ramifications of what they're doing. And that will come up later in this process as well, so I'll leave it for then. And so let's look at the next piece. So the first step is he thinks that fundamentally that when teachers are hired on to a job, he will say that the assumption was in his time that he understood that the first year was a trial year, and after that you could let somebody go with no complaints on either side. But once the person be kept beyond the first year, the assumption is that they get their job is secure unless something significant changes. So that's assumption number one. Then he goes on to say, I'm sorry, here's another proof that I'm sort of, that we'll see briefly. There's a question, let's say somebody borrows an item from somebody else. So the Gemara talks about borrowing it bitovah, for the favor that's involved. So there's a whole discussion there of what that means. Since isn't every loan have a tovah to it? So the assumption is there's an opinion of the Aruch, the Tosos quotes, that it's the Aruch thinks that because of the good that's being done, the favor that's being done, it means you can hold on to it forever unless something changes. There's no border to it. So that would suggest that there are certain circumstances where agreements are assumed to be open-ended and to continue until something comes along to change them. Not absolutely relevant for us, but that's another support that he has for his claim. This is an open-ended commitment, and the assumption is year to year, the teachers should expect that their job is secure and that they're going to be kept on. That would mean then that this man also, who's been there for 9 years, should have the right to think that his job is secure, and it would have to be something significant that would change in order for the school to be able to release him. Now, that being true, so the question is, what is it that would, do they have enough evidence that they have the right to get rid of him? So it's their job now to prove it, especially since, aside from everything he's written until now, it is just the common practice, right? Minhag HaMedina, the common practice of schools, and also the common practice of this school, that people are not just fired at will, meaning there's a constant employment law of at-will employment, which means that, you know, other than, let's say, protected classes of people. If I own a business and I have 20 employees and I walk into an employee one day and I say, listen, you're gone. And for now, they're not a protected class. So I'm not doing it because I'm a racist or a sexist or whatever it is. I'm just something gets in my head. I don't want you hired. I don't want you working for me anymore. You haven't done anything wrong. I don't care. I don't want you to work. In private businesses, I think in general we're allowed to do that. Owners of businesses have the right to fire who they want, and you can't fight that. There's no right to employment. But in schools, Rav Moshe Feinstein is pointing out that that's not quite true. In schools, the common practice is, as well as the practice of this particular school was, that when a teacher is hired, they get to keep their job unless something goes wrong. And therefore, that would also mean that your general hiring is assumed to continue without needing to be renewed. And Rav Moshe says, in those situations where there's a common practice, they become din Torah. Right? To follow the common practice is din Torah, and that would be true. That's true in sales, for example. The Rambam writes, Shebek Ikar Gadol, an important principle, Chol Divrei Masa Umatan, in all sorts of business transactions, Shalchin Achar Minhag. You follow the common custom, and because that's like they made an explicit agreement to handle it that way. And even if it's the Rambam writes, and even if it's not the whole city that has a common practice, but this person has a practice of his, that's like he makes an explicit condition and therefore he has to follow it. So now we have to just figure out if their claims about his incompetence are accurate, and not accurate, we're not going to talk about that, are adequate to justify getting rid of him. So they claim that he can't keep the class quiet. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, but they don't claim that this happened now. Right? That can happen. It could be that kids today, right? And kids in the 40s when the man was hired were more polite and more compliant. And then all of a sudden, as times changed, this man fell out of step and he couldn't keep class anymore. And therefore, sadly, they have to get rid of him. That's not what they're claiming. They're claiming it was always true. So then Rav Moshe Feinstein says, but then their claim doesn't count. And here's where I think it gets very problematic, because he says, "Dehara'u v'yad'u v'nitpaisu." They saw, they knew what was going on, and they agreed to continue. So he says, it's clear that after the first year, once they saw that, they could have said, sorry, we can't handle this, you have to go, especially since that's the common custom as well. The common custom is the first year is a trial year, and then after the first year, they kept it, so it means that that they accepted it. So Rav Moshe, so then they say, it's not true. We were trying to help them out. We were trying to be nice guys. And this is where I think there's a deep problem. Rav Moshe Feinstein is not going to be sympathetic to their claims. And to me, it's unclear. And I know of other cases in halacha as well, where people say the halacha is that, you know, once you've agreed to something, you've agreed to it. And I think that A, people don't realize that. So they don't know the consequences of agreeing to something. And B, it puts into a bad position the people who say, it's not acceptable to me, but I want to give an opportunity for it to improve, and they don't realize they have to make an explicit condition of that. This comes up in other cases as well. One that pops into my mind, it's not this truth at all, it's coming up to my mind at all. There are situations where something happens in a marriage, early on in a marriage, where, let's say, a woman comes to understand that her husband has a significant flaw, whatever it is, the kind of a flaw that would be enough for her to say, had I known this before the marriage started, and she finds out right away, had I known this before the marriage started, I never would have married the guy. So that gets into the whole topic of Kiddushei Tov. It's commonly accepted, as far as I understand it, that if, however, she agrees to continue living with him, then she can't any longer claim it was a Kiddushei Tov. And the problem there is that it's not clear to me that she understands that, because I think in common parlance, she might think to herself, let me see if I can stand it. So that when she then comes back and says, I can't stand that, I want the marriage to be a Kiddushei Tov, people will say, no, you accepted it. So that gets to be a real thing here too. So that's not a marriage issue, but here Rav Moshe finds it saying exactly that. If they accepted it, except they say they were doing it, try to see it, work it out. He says, it's eino klum, it's not, doesn't count. Because they didn't go to court and make a explicit condition with him about this, and they didn't even tell him exactly what. So Rav Moshe Feinstein's assumption, in other words, is that what they needed to have done was take him to court after that first year and say, listen, we want to make clear in public, we're only keeping you because we're trying to help it improve. If it doesn't improve, then we're going to have to let you go. And they didn't even say it to him in that way. And now why would they say it to him in that way? Because you want to be nice to your employees, and you want to work out a collegial working relationship, and you don't want them to feel under threat all the time. So that, again, makes it a problem, because now it's Rav Moshe Feinstein saying to them that they're going to have to bear the consequences of their having tried to be nice guys. I think it's his approach, and he's Rav Moshe Feinstein, and I'm not questioning him in that way. I'm saying that there's an element here that I wish I could have raised for discussion with him. Anyway, he goes on and says, it's also, he says, impossible. He literally says, "Ze'efshar," that they decided to continue working with him after that first year, even though he wasn't a worthy teacher, and they just agreed to do it, to work it on, because it's impossible. And even if you tell me the principal was a soft-hearted guy and wanted to work with him, they would never, the Chevrei HaHanhala, the administrators, would have never allowed such a thing to happen. That makes a bunch of assumptions. A, it makes the assumption that the line between competent and incompetent is so clear that once somebody's on the line of incompetent is really not a worthy teacher, that you immediately get rid of them. But there are times, and I don't know what the 1950s was like, but certainly there are times when the other options aren't so much better. It's not so obviously clear. You're going to be able to get somebody so much better that you'll immediately pull the trigger. And it's not always so clear, meaning teachers also improve in their classroom management skills. So if you have a teacher after the first year, they've got, you know, these and these good qualities, but deficient classroom management skills. You can imagine to yourself expecting that over the course of time, those will improve. And if that were true, then you could keep them. So you work with them, especially if. So you say, but the administration would never let it. It's not clear to me that the administration would never let it, because they might buy into that same picture of it. So Moshe Feinstein thinks the implication must be that he's not really that bad. It got to be that it's not that whatever his deficiencies are, whatever he's not good at, it doesn't mean that students are so clearly not learning anything that he's not worthy of being a teacher. Again, that makes an assumption about administrators in schools and they're overseeing it. Having to do with this case, I certainly have experienced in schools I've worked in schools I've seen, in schools, you know, I've had children in, teachers who were not succeeding with their students, and the administration didn't always pull the trigger on them. It didn't always say, oh, we got to get rid of this person, for various reasons. There's lots of complicated reasons why schools do or don't hire and fire people, and I'm just not sure that I would have been as confident as Moshe Feinstein of the implications of a school maintaining a teacher. I knew a school once that I worked, where I worked in, there was a guy who was a completely, literally an incompetent teacher, and he was kept on because he was an excellent politician, and he eventually rose to be, in the administration. A Jewish studies principal at this school, when I was confident that he couldn't teach kids a lick. So there's lots of things that go on. There's politics. So Moshe Feinstein's confidence that if the man wasn't a good teacher for these students, that he wouldn't have been kept on, I'm not sure that it's true of all schools. It may be true of this school. I don't know this school's situation. Not only that, he says also, if the fact is that when the principal helped him out, that it worked out, right? So that might be why they did it. So if the principal helped out, worked out, then the new principal could help out. We'll get to the new principal, the principal's situation. It's the principal helping out in a second. He says another possibility is that he has these other qualities, and these other qualities maybe outweighed the lack of classroom management skills, as we saw with the students who succeeded with him. Again, I think a very interesting and important question, but not one that's as clear to me as through Moshe Feinstein, meaning we don't know percentages, but let's suppose 20% of the kids in the class feel a connection to this guy, because he's a nice guy, and he explains the material very well, and they walk out with a good experience of learning. And 80% of the kids waste the year fooling around because he doesn't bother to hold on to them. They don't learn anything with it. How do we evaluate that? So Rav Moshe Feinstein seems to be saying that by virtue of the fact that we see that some of the kids learn from him, it must be that he's okay enough that you can keep him if you just support him. So now it comes to the question of support. So even if it's a lot of support, right? That's what the principal had said. It's a lot of support. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, who knows what lot and little mean? So the original principal apparently had the time to support him in this way, and yet also to be the principal of the school, right? So, he was the head of school, let's say, and he also had the time to come to this classroom all the time. And so when the new principal says, I can't do this, so Rav Moshe Feinstein says, clearly you could be able to, because the previous guy did, and ve'ada'at zeh kiblu, and that was part of the understanding and the employment of this teacher, became part of the puzzle. So again, that's a comp to me. That's an odd thing to say in two different ways. One way is, let's even assume the first principal was so efficient that he was able to do his job and to support the teacher and get it all done. I'm not sure that I understand why that then becomes an obligation upon the second principal. I think Rav Moshe Feinstein seems to be saying that the second principal, when he comes in, has to accept upon himself all the ways of managing the school that the first principal had, but that seems an odd thing to say, especially since, for all I know, the first principal left because the school suggested to him that he wasn't getting lots of parts of his job done, or the job had changed such that there was no longer time in a day, or he had been neglecting things that nobody realized, but the new principal now comes in. There's so many complications of this question. I just find it an odd position of Rav Moshe Feinstein to have taken, that by virtue of the fact the first principal could do this, and I'm not even sure he could. All we know is that he did do this, and we don't know what the cost of that was. But that becomes a condition of this man's employment. So too, you say, the new principal says, switching the kids in the middle of the year is not an acceptable educational practice, and if this man's employment requires it, we can't go on doing this. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, "Vaday lo haya ze ivud gadol." It couldn't be that it was a terrible, terrible thing for the kids. Because if it was a terrible, terrible thing for the kids, again, the members of the administration would not have allowed it to happen. That is, one more time, and I don't mean to repeat myself, but it's assuming about members of administration a proactive involvement in the educational needs of the students that I'm just not sure is the way schools actually work. There's schools are complicated places. There's lots of things going on. There's lots of factors at play. And I don't know, right? Meaning, I don't know that it's always true that the educational benefits of the students are the only factors that come into play. And it could be that people would have said, listen, he's a nice guy. We don't want to go through the fight of firing him, because getting rid of a teacher, as Rav Moshe Feinstein gives us evidence of, getting rid of a teacher is extremely difficult. He might take us to a din Torah, we might lose, and we don't want to bother. So we'll switch the kids. Yeah, it's not good for the kids, but you know what? The kids aren't learning that much anyway. Certainly, I've heard teachers, I've said myself about certain students that I have no confidence they're going to learn all that much better in one place or another. So we might as well. But that doesn't mean it's not a bad educational policy. It just means that we, given a set of choices that are suboptimal, this is the one they chose. But Moshe Feinstein is saying it can't be that it was such a terrible choice because then they never would have chosen it. And I find that not so clear to me in practice in terms of the way schools work. In any case, for Moshe Feinstein, that is more evidence that this teacher was workable if they wanted to. And the new principal doesn't have the right to come in and change an agreement, a standing agreement. Again, a very interesting claim of Moshe Feinstein's, because that means that a new principal, even if he sees that the old agreements, the old arrangements aren't working for various reasons, there could be all sorts of reasons they're not working, Moshe Feinstein's saying it doesn't matter. It's not his right to fire somebody, to get rid of somebody, because the old agreements were not workable. So unclear to me how Moshe Feinstein is then sure that the Chevrei HaHanhalah, the administrators previously, would never have agreed to it. They might have said to themselves, we better agree to it because we're not going to win on it anyway. In any case, another claim they might have made was they could say, you know what, you're right, maybe you're right. Maybe the old administration and the members of the administration have accepted it, but they didn't really have the right to accept it because it didn't really work out well. And there's a general concept in halacha that somebody, when somebody's a messenger for somebody else, they're only messengers to do things that are productive and constructive. So here, it's called the Tikune Shadatik. I sent you to accomplish something good. So if they are, in their jobs and in their running of the school, the messengers of the school community, of the parent body, of those who are what we call, education people call stakeholders in the institution, you could say if they're doing the wrong thing, then their shlichut, their messengership shouldn't take effect. So Moshe rejects that as well. He says because nobody's thinking that they're going to do the wrong thing and they're going to do it in a way that won't work out for the best interest of the students. It must be that this man's been here for 9 years, that it worked out fine. Not great, maybe, but fine. And there are ways to work it out. And even if we have some doubts about it, doubts are not good enough to allow us to get rid of a teacher who's been working out. And he says, and I talked to other principals, right? I did a little bit of research and experts in education from other yeshivot, and they said after the first year, you don't get rid of somebody just because he has bad classroom management skills. Now, again, that's not for us to look back and wonder, but the rumors are that the late 40s and the early 50s were not the heyday of Jewish education, when Jewish education went all that well. And perhaps if these principals had gotten rid of a few teachers or had the threat of getting rid of teachers who didn't have classroom management skills, maybe learning would have gone better. I don't know. So he says, yeah, so it's more work for this principal. So that's what other principals do too. They say, yep, it becomes the obligation of the principal to work with the teacher, to find him good ways to advise him on how to improve, to work with him, and then also to assign him students who are the gentler students so they won't have classroom management problems so much. But to get rid of a person, we don't do that anymore. And these other principals had also said, it's always nice when experts speak from outside the situation, they said, you know what, if somebody can control a classroom for 2 months, if 2 months work out, then if you have the principal coming in and often enough, it'll work out for the rest of the year as well. And therefore, for all these reasons, Moshe Feinstein thinks they're not allowed to get rid of this principal, of this teacher. They're not allowed to fire him. They have to keep him for all the things that we said. That is, so Moshe Feinstein, I will say, I've seen not that many tshuvot of his, but I've seen a couple of other tshuvot sort of relevant to these kinds of topics. And it seems to me that he was very concerned with protecting teachers. And it may be that in those days, the teachers were very much at a disadvantage, were often mistreated. I think the story is that those days often teachers weren't paid on time and things like that. So it could be that he was alert to and sensitive to the need to protect people who were in the subordinate position, who didn't have a lot of protections on them, and it was his job to stand up for them. And that might be all what's going on here as well. And it might be that all of the things that he's pointed out were actually true, and the teacher wasn't nearly as bad as the new principal, right? It's also easily possible. New principal comes in and just doesn't like a guy, and he says, oh, I'm going to get rid of him. Whereas the old principal says, listen, he's got problems, right? It's true, he's got issues. You got to do things to help him out, but it's workable, and it works out just fine. So it's either way. But so that's the other possibility. So that's Moshe Feinstein for the 11th of Kislev on when we can or can't fire an incompetent teacher, the sensitivity we need to bring to these kinds of questions, because there are a lot of people involved and livelihoods of people are at stake, and his livelihood is at stake and the quality of education is at stake, and these are all factors that we have to come into play when we think about questions of retaining or terminating, in terms of employment, of teachers in schools. Have a great day.